Otis did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across London as you listen. This is their story. In Bermondsey and Old Southwark, nursing training places sit empty while hospital wards struggle with chronic shortages. The NHS faces a workforce crisis, yet the very people who want to train as nurses are told there is no money for their education.
My name is Otis, and I wanted to be a nurse. I grew up in a council flat near Borough Market with my nan. She worked as a cleaner at Guy's Hospital for 30 years. Coming home with stories about the nurses who made the difference between someone getting better or not. She used to say looking after people was the highest calling you could have. I keep her photo in my wallet now. She died when I was 17, just before my A-levels, and I knew then what I wanted to do with my life. After sixth form college in Elephant and Castle, I got a job as a healthcare assistant at Guy's. 2 years on the wards taught me everything about why we need more nurses. I watched qualified nurses manage 12 patients when they should have had six. I saw people waiting longer than they should, because there simply weren't enough hands. Every shift reinforced what my nan had told me. This work mattered, and there was more of it than we had people to do. I read medical journals on my lunch breaks and saved every penny I could for nursing training. In 2022, I applied to King's College London's nursing program. I scored high on the entrance exam and the interviews went brilliantly. The admissions team told me I was exactly what the NHS needed. Young, local, committed, with hands-on experience already. They said my application was impressive. Then they called me back a week later. "We're sorry," the admissions officer said, "but funding for your cohort has been temporarily suspended due to Treasury spending constraints. There is no funding for new training positions this year." I asked what that meant. She explained that Health Education England's budget had been capped, and they could only fund a fraction of the nursing places that universities were ready to provide. The course existed, the lecturers existed, but the Treasury had decided the country could not afford to train the nurses the NHS desperately needed. It sounded reasonable when she said it. Everyone was talking about tough times and difficult choices. I tried again in 2023, this time applying to multiple London universities. King's again, plus Greenwich, South Bank, Middlesex. Each one gave me the same response. Excellent application, perfect fit for the programme. No funded places available. The pattern was identical. Universities wanted to train nurses. Students wanted to become nurses. Hospitals needed nurses. But Health Education England's local office in Elephant and Castle told me there was simply no budget for new training positions, even though Guy's Hospital where I worked had 40 nursing vacancies and was using agency staff at three times the cost of permanent nurses. When I went to King's College to collect my rejected application documents, something didn't add up. I walked through the nursing department and found entire lecture halls sitting empty. The equipment was there. The teaching rooms were spotless, everything ready for students who would never come. I spoke to three qualified nursing lecturers in the corridor who told me they'd been put on reduced hours because there were no students to teach. One of them, Dr. Sarah Chen, had been teaching nursing for 15 years. She looked genuinely upset when I explained why I was there. "This is the worst part of my job now," she said. "Every year we have brilliant candidates like you, and every year we have to turn them away because someone in Westminster has decided we cannot afford to train nurses. I have empty classrooms and 40 hours a week, instead of my usual full-time schedule. The infrastructure exists. The expertise exists. The students exist. What exactly are we saying we cannot afford?" That was the moment I started to see the contradiction. I walked past the empty lecture theatres, past the simulation labs with medical equipment sitting unused, past notice boards advertising nursing courses that would never run. In the same building, there were professors with decades of experience being paid to teach smaller and smaller cohorts. Down the road, there were hospitals desperately short-staffed, paying premium rates for agency nurses, while permanent positions went unfilled. I started asking different questions. If the people existed, me, dozens of others who'd been rejected, and the teachers existed, and the facilities existed, and the hospitals needed us, what exactly was it that there was no money for? The government that issues the pound had chosen not to spend the pounds that would connect people like me to the training we wanted and the work the NHS needed doing. That was a political decision dressed up as an accounting problem. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, we did. Whether the skills could be taught, they could. Whether the hospitals needed nurses, they desperately did. All the real resources were there. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It was the same logic as a household that says, we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still working as a healthcare assistant at Guy's. Still watching qualified nurses stretch themselves across too many patients. Still seeing the gap between what the wards need and what the system provides. But I understand now that what happened to me was not bad luck or unfortunate timing. It was the result of decisions made by people who had alternatives, who chose to treat public investment as a burden rather than as the means by which nurses reach the wards that need them. This is not just my story. It is the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side, while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. The cupboard was never bare. The government chose not to open it.
What Otis experienced has a name: fake experts. This technique relies on citing economists or commentators who treat the household budget analogy as self-evident, as though repeating it makes it true. Think of how tobacco companies once had scientists who insisted smoking was harmless, or how pharmaceutical companies funded studies that minimized their drugs' side effects. The expertise was real, but it served a particular agenda. In Otis's case, whenever he questioned why nursing training had to be rationed, the response was always, economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation. But which economists? The profession is divided. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say without naming them is an appeal to unnamed authority. The fake experts maintain the fiction that government budgets work like household budgets. They ignore the fundamental difference. Households use currency. Governments issue it. When Health Education England said there was no budget for nursing training, they were applying household logic to a currency issuer. The real constraint was never pounds. It was training facilities, qualified teachers, and motivated students. In Otis's story, all of those existed and sat idle. The resources existed, the people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Bermondsey and Old Southwark ranks 168 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation, 2025, published by MHCLG. The constituency has 990 registered charities according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Total grants received amount to £55.6 million, according to 360 Giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.